Good evening. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guests this evening are Michelle Griffin-Young, Executive VP, Government and External Affairs at the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce. She is a producer of Business Matters at WFMC-TV. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you. And John Hayes, Executive VP, Chief Lending Officer, New Tripoli Bank, and dear golfing friend.
Happy to be here, Cameron.
And people here know the inside joke. I'm no golfer, but I have a stick and I hit it. Sometimes goes. And of course, Jack Founder, CEO, Manufacturer Resource Center, that has been my guest a good number of times. And he wants to defend manufacturing sector as long as he can talk.
And don't take it personally, but I'd rather be on the golf course.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. This evening, we are going to review the results of the Greater Chamber of Commerce Cameron Afshar Survey of Local Businesses, which was conducted in October 2017. Just a little background. The Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce Cameron Afshar Survey of Lehigh Valley Businesses is a quarterly survey that we have been doing since 1997. Yes, we have been doing this for a long time. And according to the October survey, business sentiment and the overall confidence in the local economy dropped for the third quarter in a row and has now given back all of its gains since January. It fell even below its October 2016 level. Other than plans for future hiring, all other indices in the model have dropped significantly below their January 2017 level. The index of hiring for the last 6 months dropped by a significant 7.5% from its July level. This index is now below its January level. It is clear that the post-election enthusiasm among businesses in the Valley has vanished. Actual payroll employment in the Valley has also declined by 2,200 jobs between September 2017 and September 2016. And this is going in the opposite direction of the national average, which added 1.8 million new jobs over the last 12 months. By that account, we should have been adding up more than 6,000 new jobs instead of losing 2,200. And this is a pretty sizable and unexpected decline. Okay, everybody, you guys have seen the numbers. We are looking at businesses still hiring and initial unemployment claims being at a level that is associated with a tight labor market, but total employment is not going up. It's going down, actually, in the Valley. Jack?
Well,
you had good ideas before we started.
Yeah,
I see you're looking at me.
I think I still do. I'm still very positive in manufacturing right now. I see it from across the country. I'm part of an MEP system that we get ideas from that area. Also, the state-wise, all seven regions that we have, seven IRCs across the state, everybody's first time in my 12 years have been very positive on everything right now. So manufacturing itself, I think, is very potentially strong. The problem manufacturing has, though, is to find the qualified people, and I think that's a big issue. There are, I think, each right now there's 10,000 baby boomers leaving the workforce every day across the country. And I think manufacturing has probably a higher percentage of older workers, which I think is pretty much a trend across the country also. So a lot of the hiring is adding jobs to replace people that have retired. Therefore, that's not going to affect your number.
The total number,
And if you get in a situation where you're having difficult time finding the talent that you're looking for, I can kind of see that. Companies are making a lot of changes right now in terms of automation you hear about, in terms of doing a lot of process improvements. We've been very busy at MRC over the last year, 2 years, just for those kinds of things. People are saying, we can't find the people. Let's figure out how to streamline our operation, get more product out with the same people. And I think there's a lot of that in there in the manufacturing arena.
John, you were telling me before we started that at Metropole Bank, you had major problems in hiring new people as you were trying to hire tellers.
We did, Caramon. It was an interesting process. We've hired about a half dozen tellers and customer service reps over the past 6 months, and we had to go through an extensive process. We reviewed well in excess of 150 or 200 resumes to fill the six positions. We got quality people ultimately. We're very happy with the people that we brought on board. They're outstanding employees and off to a good start. I think Jack made a very good point regarding retirements and how they impact the manufacturing world and the aging population there. That's very definitely happening in the banking world as well. We don't have that influx of younger employees into our industry, so it makes it that much tougher to handle the retirements. Yeah. You don't have the internal core of people to draw on. I'd be curious in terms of the Valley, what the age of our typical workforce, how it bands. And I ask that from the standpoint, I have a daughter who's 24. She essentially moved to Philly when she went to college and never came back. I look at her graduating class and I see an awful lot of younger people that grew up in the Valley and that talk about coming back when they want to start a family in 5 or 10 years, but aren't here now, that they moved to Philly or they moved to D.C. or to New York or Chicago, et cetera. My sense is that we're doing better, but we still have a challenge in terms of retaining a younger workforce, which would lead to employment gains given where we are.
Sure. Michelle, you are obviously involved with all the members of the chamber, and what do you see?
Well, it's interesting, too, from my perspective, that the chamber has such a close relationship with the workforce board, Lehigh Valley. And in working with, they obviously have the people that are looking for jobs. We have the businesses that are trying to find the qualified people. One of the things that we've identified is now that businesses, especially our small businesses, which make up about 97% of our chamber's membership, they run so lean. It's not a family business anymore. There's not extra people around. And I'm certainly not pointing this on the bank, but what we see a lot is that someone they would have hired maybe 10 years ago, they don't have time to get that person up to speed. Right. And so everyone is saying, I need you to walk in the door with exactly what I want or you're out the door. And so we are really trying to work with our employers to find out more specifically what the skills are, instead of just saying we need soft skills, we need high-tech skills. That's something we're working on closely with Jack as well.
Oh, great. And actually, Jack, with reference to people above the age of 65, Lehigh Valley is about 18% compared to 15% national average. So we have a little bit more of baby boomers who are more likely to retire.
Cameron, do you recall how that number has trended over the last few years? That's not a fair question, but I figured I'd ask anyway.
What's new, Jack?
Curious about that. Because my sense is that's probably been trending up, just given what I've seen. Mm. And again, it's anecdotal because I'm talking about one daughter coming out of one school. Right. But what I've heard, it fits that.
Well, if you look at the cycles, out of World War II, you had a younger generation getting into manufacturing. Manufacturing just got started, so everybody went back into the workforce. And they end up having I'm a baby boomer born in 47. So you take a look at when I went into the labor force, which was the late 60s, early 70s, there was a big group at that time of my generation in manufacturing because my parents were retiring. And so now we are now in our 60s and our 70s. So you had two big spikes since World War II, and I think part of that's why our industry, an older industry that really got going on its feet after World War II, has these spikes as opposed to a bank and so forth. I would think there's more level in terms of hiring people and this kind of thing where a lot of the technology people are going now, and that's why they're having a hard time finding people to replace them because you can't just produce that experience.
And it's hard work.
Yeah, right.
But the second wave that is coming after the baby boomers is at a much lower height, so to speak, in terms of percentage increase than the baby boomer. When you look at them, it's like two waves in the ocean coming in. One, the baby boomer way up there, say 10 feet high, and then the second one that it's coming is about 4 or 5 feet out. So it is a different aspect that we are seeing. And that's very common in developed countries, as we are getting to that point that people don't have 7, 8 babies so that one or two would last, which is, if you go to the beginning of the 20th century or late 19th century, that would have been the most common method. Most families had a lot of children because infant mortality, all of those things were very, very high compared to now.
And we have big basements to keep them in.
Okay, now let's look at the size of companies that reduce or increase their employment in the last 6 months. And we have a chart for everybody who's sitting here. So we're going to describe what is on the chart. Basically, the smallest businesses in the valley, those with less than 11 employees, which incidentally composes more than 70% of all businesses in the valley, they had the least amount of change as we compared to the other sizes. 80% of them did not hire or lay off anybody. 15% of them hired new employees, while 5% laid people off. The largest companies in the valley, on the other hand, those with more than 100 employees, and incidentally, they're only 3% of all the businesses in the valley. They showed most movement. More than half of them hired new employees, while only 4% of them laid off people. What do you guys think?
I think what Michelle said a little bit earlier is exactly right. The smaller businesses will always tend to run more lean. Just to a simple math exercise, let's say an employee has or employer has 10 employees, each making $50,000 a year, and they had one additional employee also making $50,000 a year. Their payroll just went up 10%.
Right.
You run the same number at an employer with 100 employees, adding that one employee went up 1%.
Right.
The economic impact of hiring, the opportunities are great, but the impact is such with smaller employers that they try very hard in the early stages as they're building to only add larger expenses, such as employees, when they absolutely have to. They do try; they run very lean, and they're not quick to ramp up hiring unless it's, I'll use a manufacturing example. There's a large contract that's going to run for a long period of time that you need to staff up to handle it, that you can't do it through contract labor or something of that nature. But it's a challenge when you're a smaller employee to grow the business as quickly as the payroll would grow otherwise.
One of the conflicts that we see, too, in the Valley is the different opinions on the H-1B visa program. Especially the larger companies that we have here are bringing employees in from outside the country. And the reason for that is because they do have those specific engineering skills, math skills, etc., that companies are looking for. And I think that in working with the youth, the college-aged youth in my role, I see a lot of people steering towards traditional bachelor's degrees, of which are really not that relevant today. I graduated with political science and broadcast journalism. I'm very lucky that I was able to get into a career 30 years ago and build up my experience. But people don't have the luxury of having small businesses with public relations coordinators and jobs that we used to see. I know Jack sees a lot of that with manufacturing as well.
You know, manufacturing, you take a look at right now, it's in its longest growth cycle in the past 30 years. Manufacturing pulled out of the recession pretty much before anybody else did back in the 05s and 06s or whenever the 08s. And that
recession just started in 08, so
yeah.
Give it a little time back. Let them go down before pulling them out.
But well, I'm just whatever the date was. But I'm just saying is that that's continued. Mm-hmm. I think there was a time there where the manufacturing base didn't realize that when you got somebody and you trained them, they would with the concept they would stay. Well, in reality, in some of the new younger generation, if everything is right, they'll stay. Mm-hmm. But you know they do change quickly, and I think it's just now that I think the manufacturing management is finally realizing, you know, if you can hire them, how do you keep them?
And I think it's that keeping aspect that I think companies are starting to really do a good job of and changing the way they run their manufacturing companies. So there's a lot of neat things going on right now.
And by pulling out of recession, you mean not in terms of employment, in terms of output.
Right, yeah. Output, yeah.
Because manufacturing is so much becoming automated that the cartoons now are painting that a huge manufacturing company and two people are there and one person is just there to not let the other guy fall asleep. Computers,
the good old days.
That computers that runs itself.
And it's only going to get worse everybody, you're moving the jobs to China and so forth because of labor costs and so forth. Well, now people are designing buildings and factories and building products with a lesser percentage of labor for the product itself. And therefore, we can be competitive around the world. And that's what's really helped manufacturing. And we'll continue that way. That's not going to change.
And also one of the other factors, which is there, China is now experiencing what Japan did 30 years ago. Now cost of labor in China is going up in a significant way. And they are farming out some of their stuff. And the level of competitiveness that they had 10 years ago is totally gone.
That's correct.
It's nothing like that. So in and as of itself, that will reduce the number of jobs that will go to China simply because, okay, there was time you get there, it cut your cost 40%. Okay, we can play that game. Now it cuts you 25-20%. It becomes less competitive to move there and fewer companies going to go there.
Well, you can stay on the local. What's the job of today? What's the job of tomorrow? What's the job of 10 years from now? Cameron, you and I had this conversation a few weeks ago. Right now, if you've got a commercial driver's license and you can drive a truck, you might as well print that on gold leaf because you can go to work literally for anyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's such a shortage of truck drivers. If Cameron's forecast on driverless trucks is accurate, that bubble will burst in, about 2022, if I remember correctly. I think you said it was about a five-year window. To me, I think that's a little bit quick, but 2027, 2030, you're going to see a large part of the over-the-road fleet driverless, and that will impact significantly what people are doing. So if they're training to be a truck driver today, yes, that's a great job today. It's a great job tomorrow. Is it a great job 5 or 10 years from now? That's a great question. Yep.
Yeah, and then also the fully automated warehouses, which the prototypes are here. They work. Their competitiveness is still not that high. But as time goes by, they will become. And also the increase in wages for people who work in this kind of industries will also drop because of the fact that now they're competing with a machine, which it's no longer a matter of having union, does not have a human aspect attached to it. But people get normally sick. They have different production characteristic. All of those stuff are there. Machine doesn't have any of those. And the machines are becoming much more predictable in their operation.
There was a study by the National Manufacturing Institute and Deloitte just recently said in the next 10 years, there'll be nearly 3.5 million jobs in manufacturing vacant because they can't find the talent to do it. So it's totally changing what a job looks like 10 years from now versus now. The requirement is that you're not going to have entry-level jobs that just someone graduating from high school can go in and do. You're going to have that talent trained, I don't see career in technical schools, community college, or whatever we're talking about. Without that, you'll have a hard time finding a job, especially in manufacturing, because you're still going to have the automation, but somebody's got to fix it when it breaks. Somebody's got to program it. Somebody's got to do those kind of things, and that's not going to change. And there's still an awful lot of manufacturing companies that are small, 20-person machine shops and so forth that just don't have the capital to get into all that automation, and that is still needed. But with 3D printing and things like that, some of those areas might change drastically.
Oh yeah, so. 3D printing and the drones. John, you and I have been talking about the drones, and I've been told we reached the end of this section. We're going to take it up the other. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guests this evening are Michelle Young from the Chamber, John Hayes from Nutripoli Bank, and Jack Fonder from Manufacture Resource Center. Pretty welcome. And John, before we ended the first part, we were talking about your favorite subject, shooting down drones with prices attached to them.
Why, boy, that sounds different when you say it versus when I say it.
Why don't you elaborate on that?
I guess I have to
now. I hope somebody from FAA is listening.
Yeah, and I also sit on the Airport Authority Board, so that's
true.
Yeah, I'm the perfect one to talk about these kinds of things. It's interesting. The concept of drone delivery is one that we've all read a lot about. Amazon has piloted it in more than a few locations. And Amazon is the 64,000-pound gorilla. What they want to do, they will do. Yeah. It gets interesting in that when you're talking about remote delivery packages in more rural areas, and even with the development we've had in the Lehigh Valley, there's still a large, large component of our market would be considered rural, agricultural, et cetera. Do you run the risk of anything in that regard where drone flights become targets for people that simply don't like it, don't trust it, wonder what it's up to, all those sorts of things? It gets to be a very interesting conversation as to what will be accepted widely, what won't be accepted. Amazon's certainly flexible, and they can do drone deliveries in areas where they work, and they don't where they don't. And that would be, I'm sure, fine by everyone. But it brings up a general question as to the response people will have to technology. And I'll go back to what we were talking about before. Driverless tractor trailers scare the hell out of me. Seeing one come up from behind, I don't know what I would do. Because it's simply something that...
Oh, as soon as you slow down, it slows down right behind you.
Yeah.
Even you have it in your car, you put it in cruise, and I think your car
adaptive
has
cruise,
that. Yeah.
Right?
Adaptive cruise, it just slows down.
Yeah, except that I'm in control of my car while I'm using that, and if something goes wrong, I'm there. Yeah.
That's when a you've better got, computer, though.
Computers never go haywire. We all know that.
And doesn't look, oh, who is calling me now? Okay.
Exactly. That's right. Or text messaging or things like that. But if you end up with a bug in the computer code or anything of that nature, it's an area of technology that will get here. I have no doubt about it whatsoever. But public acceptance of that is going to be a very interesting process to watch.
Actually, when you said that with flying skids with prices attached, I checked with a couple of guys I know that were involved in this kind of stuff, and they told me that even as currently, the plans are not to fly over people's backyards. They'll fly over streets, right of ways. You can't shoot somebody a drone which is flying on the streets. You can shoot it.
You can't legally shoot it.
You can't keep the prize. There will be somebody there talking with you. No, all of them have cameras attached to them.
There's the issue of legality versus what actually happens.
Yes,
you can't speed on public highways.
That's true, too.
Of course not. I would never do that. Michelle does that. I would never.
I absolutely do not. Never. You know, Jack started to bring this issue up before. When you talk about things like the drones and the automation, I think that we are at a point just like we were during the Industrial Revolution where we as Americans and entrepreneurs have to figure out how to take advantage of those new things that are coming into our world and find ways to be able to create more jobs and wealth around that. I think that people automatically, like when you're looking at the amount of jobs that manufacturing is looking at losing, it's petrifying. But people do have to be willing to go back to school. And even at, you know, I'm almost 50 years old, that these are the things that we have to do in today's America to be able to keep up with the pace of the new automation.
That's true.
It's critical. The critical thing is people right now, they have to realize that innovation
is what is going to grow this country. And when you have this open thing, people, you know, Uber and things like that will come up. Yeah, it's destructive and so forth for some industries, but in reality, it might be the right way to go. And we're going to have the same thing with, you know, with drones and so forth. There'll be regulations. We're going to have to just work our way through them. But the key is that we got to keep being imaginative, and that's the only way we're going to stay where we are in this country.
Absolutely agree. Yeah.
More than 50% of American workforce in 1850 worked in agriculture. Now less than 2%,
right.
1% because things changed. And even the actual number of people who worked in agriculture went up through 1910 and then started to come down simply because the work that they do was done by these stuff that were put together, and they had a motor with it, and it could do the thing twice better, three times, 10 times better. So they left that job and went where they were manufacturing those things. Mm-hmm. So manufacturing sector bloomed all the way through 1979. The number of people who worked in the manufacturing sector increased. But since 1979, the number of people who work in manufacturing sector is coming down nationwide. And in our Lehigh Valley, if you look at it, 1969, we had about 115,000 people working in manufacturing, more than well above 50% of everybody who had a job here. And that held almost through 1979. From then, it just went down. Now it's only 40,000.
Well, if you take a look, though, the gross state product that's produced in the manufacturing sector right now in the Lehigh Valley is 15%, which is as high as it was. You know, had to go almost back to Bethlehem Steel's heyday when it was that high. But we're only 10% of the workforce. So that's, once again, the efficiency aspect of
we are
getting more out in the region in terms of manufacturing, but are doing it with less people.
And comparatively, unfortunately, we are not doing as well as some other areas which have more mechanized, they're using fewer people, and but that's the direction of movement, and you're right, that is where it is going, and unless we find that change, and the thing of it is, for the agricultural sector, it took 50 years to go through the first adjustment. Manufacturing did it in about a quarter century. Now we are looking at 10 years. The ability of societies, communities to adjust that fast is not that great. We can't get that much going. And that has consequences across the board. We still, our educational system is not geared to what the market needs. If you look right now, there's many places are adding commercial driver license courses, very expensive. And people are taking these things thinking, okay, the rest of my life I'm doing this. That realization should be attached to this process. People should know it's not that, it won't last that long. These things exist. They are working. They are past the theoretical aspect. There is the famous truck called Otto, O-T-T-O, which carried 50,000 cans of beer over 120 miles. That was his test. And it did perfectly. This is a brand new world. This is a brave new world. Fortunately, I'm going to be retired by the time all these changes happen.
Cameron, you brought up agriculture, and I think that's really an interesting topic when we're talking about jobs, because I think we were raised to believe agriculture jobs are going away. They're not going to be existent. And today we see more and more in the mainstream of farm to table. People want to know where their food is coming from. We've seen a number of new members who are actually local farmers now because people are trying to break into that business. So sometimes I think that's how we have to think of not necessarily, it's just a different way of doing things and a different way of creating jobs.
Sure. You have to reinvent that job process. We are even looking at the number of people who work for banks and financial institutions. John, you guys are, although your bank is hiring a lot.
We are hiring and we're expanding. We're building what will be our third banking office in Upper Milford Township between Emmaus and Mekunji. We hope to be open middle of next year.
He is advertising in the middle. Question.
You
of
let
course
right
I am.
Into that. That's
I opened
right.
the door.
4892 Buckeye Road, Emmaus, Pennsylvania.
My fault.
You got to shut him up.
But the number of people who are working in banking and finance in the Lehigh Valley is dropping.
It is. We've seen continued consolidation in the banking industry. The latest one was BB&T's acquisition of National Penn Bank. Mm-hmm. They've already closed a few offices locally. BB&T also consolidated certain functions at other regional offices out of this area. Okay. For example, consumer lending, I think, was consolidated down into Baltimore. I could be wrong, but it was something like that. And a couple of other departments were consolidated into offices in Baltimore and in Texas, if I remember correctly. But again, the key there is we did see a number of those jobs go. We've seen that with all banking mergers and acquisitions. Part of the deal is economies of scale, and that's a fancy word for layoffs.
True.
So we see that, but we don't see that in the community banking sector. We're adding our third banking office next year.
You said that.
I said, did I say where it was, Cameron?
You said that, too.
4892 Buckeye Road.
You said that, too.
Our very friendly competitor, Embassy Bank, Dave Lobach, they opened a branch in Nazareth, I believe, about a year ago. Okay. So you do see from a community banking perspective, Fleetwood Bank opened a branch in downtown Boyertown on the tail of BB&T closing all of NatPen's operations in Boyertown.
But the concept and the business model in banking is changing. There was a time that was all about branches. You have to have a branch here for it to work. Nowadays, so many people don't even go to a bank to open an account. I thought you at least have to go to a bank to open an account. And to get you an experience I had personally a lot of years ago, 20 years ago, we were doing a study for a bank, and the banker marketing gentleman asked me that, why don't you ask people if they want to use their telephone to do banking? And I said, they can't wait until they get to their laptop at home or their computer at work to do it. He said, well, let's check it. So I reluctantly asked the question. I said, this will have nobody answering this. It came back. Nobody my age answered that. They all didn't want telephone at that time. Everybody younger said, oh, of course, we want it. So the thing is that even for those of us, and I do research for a living, I am looking at these numbers as they change. Even to me was astonishing. I was thinking, well, I'm early adopter. I get this thing. You wait until you get there. And then my daughter was telling me she opened her account without even going to the bank. Oh, you did it on my computer? No, Dad, on my phone.
And depositing checks on your phone now,
absolutely.
Right?
Not depositing checks and all of you need fewer people in the back office, and slowly these machines that actually talk to you, and there are models to test and see if you are talking with a machine or you're talking with a real person. Are becoming available because the machines are becoming so good. A client of mine adopted a new telephone system for calls that were coming in. And their calls, and this is some years back, their calls was you tell the name of the person, and the guarantee was that the machine will understand it or we will change the module for you free. It has to understand anybody who calls, any accent, any way they talk, even they say the name halfway, they do this. These are not 1,000 employee companies. This is 40, 50 employees, so there are not all kinds of names. So it says the design and the coding is not that hard. But that was 10 years ago, and now everything is moving there. So the need for that is getting less.
It is. It's a very good point. You raised a number of good points. And I could talk about this for the entire rest of the show if you want to send Jack and Michelle
home.
But banking has evolved. I was with East Penn Bank, a very well-regarded, very well-respected community bank for about 10 years. And that was back in the days where banks, every branch that you added was contiguous to another branch, and they were very tight markets. Mm-hmm. So East Penn had a branch in Emmaus and in Macungie and in Trexlertown and in Fogelsville, and you see how that would map out. Okay. Today, from a bank's perspective in the community bank sector, you think strategically. You're not contiguous. There is significantly more distance because you're absolutely right. More and more people are doing more and more of their banking online. We do believe in a local presence being necessary, but it's a different need than it was 10 or 15 years ago, and it will be a different need 10 or 15 years from now.
Now it's just you need to show your flag, and you have to be in a general area, so it's not that they're going to go there every day. Yeah, but once a month they see it, that is good enough in terms of advertising.
Well, I mean, I work at our Classville. We have a branch on the first floor. Our lending offices are on the second floor, and I'll go to the branch to actually do something very, very rarely. Most of the time, simply walking through to get to my office and saying hi to everyone. So you're absolutely right.
No, not stopping John from further advertising. Yes, Jack, go ahead.
Talking, let's even go back to farming, how it's changed. I talk a lot to, in Harrisburg and so forth about this skills shortage and so forth, the mechatronics, you know, the maintenance kind of people to fix the machines. And after one of these sessions about a month ago, the Secretary of Agriculture from Pennsylvania came over to me and he said, you're looking for the same people I'm looking for. You know, you would think that we want somebody to be able to tear apart an engine in their sleep or something, you know, that kind of thing. He said, in reality, I'm looking for somebody to be able to pull a printed circuit board out and fix it because we're going up to GPS in terms of our locations and so forth. And he says, it's entirely different now when you're talking about the skills that they're looking for. And in reality, it's the same thing that the manufacturing is looking for. So it's all technology these days.
One of the interesting parts is when we are asking people for companies about their plans for hiring over the next 6 months, we notice this is the only index that, at least in some factors, it is showing an increase, although its long-term trend is going down. And one of the telltale signs of this is the companies with 51 to 100 employees. They are what I call the agile companies. They are large enough to have enough money to be able to do things, and small enough not to be experiencing the huge company political problems. In April, when we asked them, 80% of these companies wanted to increase employment in the next 6 months. In July, when we asked them, that number dropped to 54%. In October, is 43%. That is what concerns me. And this, obviously, part of this, the whole thing is that we are going through a structural change in employment when you are looking at not only the trucks without drivers, but now you have a TurboTax. Many of us have used it. Now, how many people who just need to file a simple 1040 will need to go now to an accountant because the machines not talk to you. It actually talks back. You say something, it's fascinating. It's like my children, they always talk back. but that these changes are coming, and interesting, even in the industry I am tangentially with, it's advice, they have robo-advisors that companies, large brokerage houses that sell you stuff, sell you a person to talk to, and their time is very expensive. They have developed this generic version. Now, if you want to just talk with a computer, now instead of charging you 1% of your asset, we charge you 0.1%. And by the way, the computer is what the guy you talk to types in all the information you give him and gives the information, but is a person, can talk to you, have ideas. But basically, everybody goes to that computer thingy, which has created a lot of stuff. We have reached the end of our second half, and this is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guests this evening are Michelle Young, Executive VP, Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce, John Hayes, Executive VP, Chief Lender, New Tripoli Bank, and Jack Fonder, CEO, Manufacturer Resource Center. We are on the last leg of this discussion. And Michelle, you were interested in looking at the company's plans for hiring in the next 6 months. And you observed that the change as the most agile companies, the ones with 51 to 100 employees, were planning to hire 80% of them were planning to increase their employment in April. That number dropped to 54% by July. And as of October, it's 43%.
Well, I would argue, at least for this region, so many business owners were looking forward to, when the administration changed in the last election, getting rid of the Affordable Care Act, the known as Obamacare. And that did not happen. And I think as things are going forward in Washington, yet not making much progress, this tax reform package is the most important thing right now to the business community. And I'll be fascinated to see how those numbers change by the next quarter if this tax reform comes out providing the lower rates and the better opportunities for businesses to expand, etc., and be able to afford to hire more people.
Well, you know that the tech, I fully agree with you on the affordable healthcare and the way it has morphed, when what it has morphed into at the present time has been an issue for many companies in terms of their ability to handle that. But in terms of the tax, I have found it very interesting that my very, very conservative friends all of a sudden have become more liberal than my liberal friends when it comes to deficit. You know that the new bill is estimated having $1.7 trillion addition to the deficit. Now, we are not talking about balance anything anytime. It is adding to that. Now, as an economist, most economists look at deficit differently than others, simply because it is a relative aspect in the whole economy. Obviously, if the economy grows by $100 billion, then $2 trillion, then $2 trillion increase is nothing. If it grows by just $2 trillion, then that is huge. So it is very much based on that. And I always bring the example of the deficit after World War II. In my classes I used to teach, I said, well, guys, do you know what happened? How and when we paid the deficit generated during World War II? Never. Yeah. We never paid it back. The economy grew so much that deficit, which was 125% of GDP, became 30%. But that required the jump that was seen during 1950s and 1960s in the economy. And also fiscal management during Eisenhower period, top tax rate was 91%. The economy grew very well, despite of that. So these things don't have that automatic relationship that we sometimes hear over and over and then say, well, it has to be right if all of these people say it and repeat it all the time.
If it's on the internet, it has to be.
There we go. Said the guy who wants to shoot down the drones.
Yes, no drones for John.
What's the address of where you shoot the drones down?
Yeah, we want to come and collect.
It's on Aspen Street or Aspen Circle in Bethlehem. Uh-oh. Is that the right name of the street? Uh-oh. No, Redfern.
Oh,
yes.
No, I don't shoot. Not drones. Okay, we looked at the purchasing plans index over the last 6 months and observed that this one in particular dropped more than the others, a 9% drop in the index since January. Now, this is not expectations. This is actual amount that it's coming down, and the size of it is significant as it went through the process, because all of a sudden a lot of companies are cutting back on that. And I've talked with a few of my clients that they were very gung-ho through April, maybe May, and they are saying that now they are cutting back because if these things don't happen, then they, at the end of the year, they would be responsible for all of that. So as they said, it's much easier to ramp up if you end the year without being in too much deficit than going there and saying, well, I thought this going to happen. Not very good for job security. You miss that much in the process. And this is something they don't have control over.
Right. I'd go back to what Michelle said a little bit earlier. I think she's absolutely right. There was an expectation coming out of the election regarding quick action on a number of topics. Mm-hmm. That quick action's not happened.
No.
You know, your fault, my fault, nobody's fault doesn't matter. It simply hasn't happened. You also have an expansion. It's been a weak one, but it's been an expansion nonetheless that is very long in the tooth. And when you look at things from a historical perspective, we're either due or overdue for a downturn.
True.
It'll be an interesting period of time. Now, we don't see any signs in terms of a downturn coming. We've got inflation under control. My own personal opinion, I do expect the Fed to act. They didn't act today, but
today,
I do expect rate increases in the near term. Some of that may be simply increasing rates so they have the ability to decrease rates at the next downturn, which would not be unexpected. But there's a lot going on right now that is all happening at the same time and in a lot of respects is unprecedented. Yeah. So for someone not to be overly enthusiastic, I think is reasonable.
Yeah. In terms of what I'm seeing in the manufacturing community, I think people still are very positive long term. I think, you know, there probably will be a correction next year somewhere, but I think it's going to be moderate and then go back up again is what I'm hearing. And that's why I think companies are doing some investments. They're growing, starting to look at expansions and so forth. And I think it's, you know, right now it seems positive. There's a lot of changes in manufacturing, and people are now getting trained and better understanding what those changes are so they can be part of that growth when it kicks in, because it's going to kick in, it seems like, especially in the United States. I mean, the U.S. is positioned very well right now with the low interest rates, with the cost of energy in the United States being so cheap compared to Europe and places like that, you know, we're positioned well for the next big push.
We asked that question about purchasing for the last 6 months, and we saw it is down. We asked our participants in our survey, what about next 6 months? That is down too, and is significantly down. These are unsettling numbers for me, because they have some historical references to things not going up, at least. And that is a concern. And you're absolutely right, John. We are, 7.5 years into this recovery. It's one of the longest ones. And a lot of things that we observe right now that are cause for concern for me things are similar to 2006, 2007. You mentioned that inflation is low. Well, consumer price inflation is low.
Mm-hmm.
You look at asset pricing, stocks are very expensive. You look at housing, Does that remind anybody of some time ago where people were bidding above the listed price, multiple bids above listed price? One of my friends who's a realtor was telling me that the new listing that he gets, they say they will not entertain any bids for the first 7 days because they fully expect that the number of the bids that are coming in are higher than what price they have put there. I remember when old days you put your house on the market, you wish somebody gave you a bid the first day. They say, thank you very much, enjoy, and run. But now it is that feeling that's happening. At the national level, we are looking at the number, a drop in the number of houses sold while price is going up rapidly. These are very similar to the indicators that we saw 2006, 2007. Doesn't mean anything beyond that. This is just could be a coincidence. But also we are asking our participants about their expectations of revenues over the next 6 months and over the last 6 months. The percent of companies that reported higher revenues over the last 6 months went down. And their expected revenues over the next 6 months went down as well. And when we ask them, how much you think your revenues will increase in the next 6 months? Back in April, people were saying, January, they were saying 9%. Then by April, it was 7%. In July was 4.5%. Now is 3.5%. All of a sudden, that expectation that we're going to have a very rapid growth disappeared. And it can't be all just because of legislation not going in, because many of these companies, they are producing stuff, they are operating, the legislation does not affect them that much. But these numbers indicate a lot of concern in the way people are looking at events. And when we look at the employment purchasing index for the entire Lehigh Valley, we see that both indices, purchasing and hiring, employment and purchasing, both of them are coming down. And again, these are all, it could be that people are getting disappointed with what is happening, not only in Washington, globally, with all this uncertainty happening all over creation. That has to be unsettling when you look at things. And but also, businesses deal with their revenue flows and their pipelines and stuff like that, and bet based on those. And I talk with contractors who provide different services, like electric contractors, others that are doing separate things on housing, and I see that they say, "Oh, it's fantastic, fantastic! How long is your pipeline?" "Oh, the longest one people told me ours is to January, maybe February." "Last year, this time, how long was your pipeline?" "Oh, that was May, June." So all of a sudden, you see a little bit more, although it looks fantastic, a little bit more caution, because people don't sign on these things this far ahead of time. And they did it last year because they were expecting things to go better. Now they are a little bit more caution. And that is the part that I always find of concern. Michelle, what do you think?
Well, I thought the purchasing piece is interesting. Just and again, I'm not saying that this is affecting these numbers hugely, but from the state level, we finally have a budget. Okay. And one of the things that was included was the NOL, the net operating loss. The cap is now removed for companies that are trying to purchase new equipment and expanding. And the percentage of the deduction is also going up in the next couple of years. So that's a positive sign.
Okay, well, that's good. If it is positive, that so you expect to see some results on the purchasing then?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see. I've heard people talk about it just happened this week. Yesterday at our board meeting, I was talking to some business people, and they were waiting for something like that to show them that there's positive hope.
Jack, you are dealing with a lot of governmental stuff. What do you see about same?
You know, there's still such a clog in getting anything through in the governmental aspects. It's surprising to me, you know, how little gets done. But as I said, I'm still optimistic. I'd love to sit here a year from now and see what really did happen in 2018, because I do see an awful lot of the manufacturing base with very positive attitudes of where it's going to be in the long haul. Mm. And so that's where I am right now.
John.
You brought up probably 8,000 or 8,500 different points in there. So I'll focus on the housing piece and asset bubbles. I think that's a very interesting area. About 3 or 4 hours ago, I sent around to my lending staff the latest statistics from the Lehigh Valley Association of Realtors on the housing sales, listings, et cetera, for the month of September. Days on market in Lehigh Valley is down to about 42 days on average, which is down a lot. Houses are moving significantly more quickly. You're absolutely right. And the average price is increasing. You're also absolutely right about that. The interesting part that's different from 2005-2006 is the level of inventory is relatively low. Mm-hmm. When you go back to 5 and 6, the inventory was high, yet we were seeing that level of irrational exuberance, to quote Mr. Greenspan. We see that irrational exuberance in pockets, in certain developments. I can't go into a lot of detail because I don't want to inadvertently impact anybody, but we have seen just in certain pockets in the Lehigh Valley housing price levels that don't make sense. And it's interesting to watch the process. You're absolutely right, though. The asset bubble issue is a very significant one. What's holding up the stock market right now? To me, that's a great question. The housing market inventory will play somewhat of a role, but there are other factors that play there as well. We've got to keep our eyes open because there are an awful lot of parallels, and we don't want to see ourselves back in 2008 all over again.
That's very true. That's very true. And the businesses are still, although their optimism is not as high as it was back in January, nowhere close to that, but the level it is, it's not a point of danger based on historical numbers. It is still pretty decent level. It is just that I get worried looking at the slope, which hopefully will change because all of us will obviously love to see the economy doing better. And this is where we are going, that if these numbers start to change or even just stabilize at where they are, it's still very good. When you are looking at still consumer sentiment nationwide being very high and people are buying stuff, car purchases, which was at slowed down, is increasing now. And as a result, we are seeing some movement in durable goods going up. And that is very important. When people buy more durable goods, it's a sign that they have more confidence in the economy. And on that happy note, we will end our conversation. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. Thank you.